Were any of you going to this?
Yes.
Yes.
There's a fabulous seminar at Portland State, free, coming up with a doctor, what's his name? Bill Thomas. It's interesting, I don't know why they're labeling it, what are old people for? That's the name of a book that he wrote in 07, and by his newest book that just came out, it's called Second Wind, and he is doing some of the most intriguing things with aging being done in the country right now. Fascinating, I mean, really fascinating. If you Google him, I mean, he's got a whole different take on how you deal with retirement homes and everything like that, breaking them into small communities. Really exciting stuff. And wow. Should we just go ahead without
these are the motions.
If someone needs to make them besides me.
Well,
we've got a quorum without parents.
Also
just go ahead. What?
I have a number of different things to share with
you. Yeah, let's do community share.
Okay.
Let's get our stuff out of the way. Okay, let's call the meeting to order. And you have the agenda in front of you. Is everybody okay with that? Approved? All those say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay. Approval of minutes.
So moved.
Aye. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All in favor.
Okay. I don't have any unusual report. We have been doing a number of things in the community over the last month, a number of things, and in different arenas. Some good things have been happening out of that. And we think it's going to bear fruit, and everything from housing to some of us presented last week at a Clark College seminar and for mature learning, and that led to the potential of one of the retirement homes here in town making some changes in some things they do, asking questions about how can we look at things differently. That's very exciting to me. And so all of this, kind of bit by bit by bit, we'll get there. It may take a little while, but we'll get there. Okay, do you want to say something? Check it out.
Well, with that, I was just wondering about the safety and health streets workshop that's going on. Everybody knows about that. So, okay. And then, this is a thing between for Paulette and myself, but this is with the BIA, their universal design building courses that they offer is coming up also. But related to what Bill just mentioned, the quarry, there was an individual who came to our session that Jim and I spoke at the college the other day, and from the quarry, this lady called me and said, we're very interested in having you come and speak to our group. And so after chatting with her for a little while and everything, it was basically two different things that kind of came out of it. They have a support group that's outside the court.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I didn't know this. And so that's what this was really all about.
What court?
Quarry. You know, Glenwood and the quarry.
For Parkinson's?
It's a support group for, I think, for families who are probably in or dealing with who's in the quarry, or who have interest in different subjects and that kind of stuff. I don't know. She just said it was a support group that's outside of the quarry, and they're looking for guest speakers to come and chat. And so this person, they are, our little booklet, sells, man. I mean,
it
that
does.
That puppy sells.
Did you bring more today?
Yeah, they're giving a presentation. But, and then it also opened up the avenue. So I had the door was open, and I said, because this person was like number two there, I said, I want to not talk to somebody about electric car or electric vehicles that are available to your folks there to be able to buzz up to Wally World or Penny's or whatever and do something. Because that's one of our points of the plan.
Okay,
electric car. And so so she was just like, wow, I will talk to yada, 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 and I'll get back to you on that.
So when you do that, they also own Glenwood, and Glenwood is right near the mall, and they have independent and assisted living there, and they have a huge population, and that would be perfect for them.
There's probably
600 people at least that live there, but they have independent living and then assisted living, and they're so close. They're right there, like three blocks from the mall.
So it would be those two.
We've got those great electric rigs now that are out there, like cars, essentially. Really nice.
Well, golf carts could be on the street too, if they're street ready.
So anyway, from our presentation the other day, one more thing kind of popped up, and then Karen and I want to go and chat about a little thing that we did this weekend. So, but
Karen,
we did an accessible garden tour this weekend.
What's your
name? Your
phone.
Sorry.
Is this on?
What is everyone?
Can you hear me? Can you hear me out there? Chuck and I went on an accessible garden tour in Portland this weekend. And it was quite amazing to see what people did. Talk about being creative in creating gardens that anyone with any kind of disability that you could ever imagine would easily have access to. It was a wonderful, wonderful experience. At one of the locations, actually, it was a gentleman who put this all together. We met a woman who has an accessibility program. I can't remember what the name of it was.
At Portland Community College.
Yes. And was very interested in the fact that the Vancouver Commission on Aging was there, and made contact with Chuck and asked if he had ever taught any classes, and Chuck said, of course, on occasion I do.
She was his point man.
Yes, so that was a great contact that was made. One of the other locations that we went to visit, I can't get out of my mind because I think it was so wonderful. There were four homes with a community garden in the middle of these four dwellings. They were all privately owned, and it was just four like minds that somehow came together, found each other, and put this wonderful garden in. And I asked one of the homeowners who had owned the vacant land and gave them permission to do this. And magically, and I do mean magically, there were two single-family detached homes on two lots, and both of the homes were sited as far to the right or the left as they could build on these two lots. Therefore, it left this big area in the middle. And these two homes were probably built in the 20s, the 30s. I mean, they weren't new construction.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, probably in the 30s.
And what one of the homeowners did, one of the homes already had a huge French door, and it was on the side of the house that looked out onto what had become a garden.
Oh, wow.
So the home on the other lot installed a huge French door on that side. And she said that just instantly brought them closer together. And then they each had another home on their property. It was wonderful.
Did you get pictures?
Yes, I did. I'm very, very poor photographer.
They operate kind of as a co-op. You know, and I think there was 11 individuals all told.
Wow.
That's, you know, and there was even in the back, there was what I would want to say a chicken coop. Mm-hmm. But it had a bed in there. Mm-hmm. You know, and so very interesting. Wow. And they had, you know, where the bikes go and all this kind of stuff. And where the garden actually is now was all concrete and pavement. It was the parking area for all of the
shared parking.
It was a shared parking area, and it tore up all of that to go and put in the garden.
You know, that's the very idea that you've been wanting to see develop.
Absolutely, yeah.
Through the neighborhood plan.
Again, it has to happen
organically.
It has to be serendipity. It can't be, we're going to go into this community and we're going to plan this. Things, wonderful things, generally don't happen that way. Sometimes they do.
Well, that thing came out of my wife and I are part of the Hardy Plant Society of Oregon, and we got the flyer on that thing from Carl Grimm, who was involved in that.
Yes.
And they're always finding these different things that people are doing. I think it would be wonderful in the community here. Chuck and I were talking about this. If we could fire up somewhere a tour of accessible homes, and
we talked about that.
What might that look like?
Yes.
And how to begin to help people see how can this work, especially ones that have been redone to be more accessible.
Right. Right.
I just think that would be fabulous for the community. Now, who that would be, if it's the building industry or the realtors, who would work with that? You know, with realtors.
Well, I think the biggest roadblock to sponsoring something like that would be actually finding accessible homes. Unfortunately, there aren't, at least to my knowledge, a whole lot of them out there. Any of you sitting in the audience know of anyone that owns one or knows where one is?
Here two. You know of one? Well, knows of one. There's three.
Okay.
In your house.
We should list this stuff. Yeah. You know, seriously, if you could get this down, would you be willing to take the names and stuff?
Absolutely.
Let's do that.
Yeah.
When we put that in this?
We did our presentation with the BIA. Remember there was one or two of the builders that said, oh, we did this or we've done that kind of thing?
Remodelers.
Yeah, the remodelers. And so I see us going back to the BIA, we need to do this anyway. Go back to the BIA and ask them about, which one of your builders have done whatever?
And the BIA is the Building Industry Association.
I think the more of this that we can do, it's just like that they did a thing, did they not, in last spring that had to do with accessory dwellings? Wasn't there some kind of a
tour?
No, here. Vancouver. Did they not do something, somebody do something with that?
Portland.
I think there may have done something here too. But that would be another one, accessory dwellings, you know, the granny flats, whatever you're going to call them.
Jim, who was the third that said they?
Oh, Walt.
Okay. And Chuck.
Walt said he knew something.
Well, yeah, on your house is accessible.
You said you knew.
Yes.
Hey, there are three. Fabulous.
And Chuck. Chuck's Chuck. Home. Yeah, yes, right. Chuck's home. I've been in it.
That's cool.
Many times.
We'll get there. This is good.
Great.
Okay, thank you. Let's move on to C-Trans presentation. Walt,
Gordon,
do you want to?
Well, thank you. I have Veronica Marty, our travel trainer, who's going to be primarily going over what her program is. And what's the irony of this is the fact that back in 1999, when somebody in this room was in charge of CDAN, we had a travel training program at that time that was our own homegrown program that was very successful. And the way we could tell it was successful is that Jonathan had popovers from the quote-unquote little old ladies that crocheted them for him. Thanks. It was actually, he had it displayed on his wall in his office. And so travel training isn't a new concept in C-Tran. It's something that went through a hiatus and we're reinstating it. Part of the reason why we've reinstated it to the amount that we have is through a program called the New Freedoms Funds through the Federal Transit Administration. And part of the New Freedoms Funds goes towards dollars and efforts that will be directed at seniors, people 65 years and older, and also people with disabilities. And so we tried something in-house by using some of our in-house staff to do it part-time while they're doing their driving or dispatching, and it really didn't gel together because we had to use them to drive the bus and dispatch the buses. So about a year and a half ago, we hired Veronica. Veronica has taken the program to the next level. She's a member of the Travel Trainers Association. And I think that you're gonna find her information very helpful. After she's done, I have one thing that I want to give you to do, because you all have homework assignments, and we'll take it from there.
Well, first I'd like to say thank you for the opportunity to come here and share a little bit about what the travel training program at C-Tran is. We know that mobility is central to our lives, getting to work, shopping, medical appointments, worship, recreation, friends, family, all of that we need transportation. And so for people without regular, reliable use of a car, other options are needed. By educating people about these options, travel training can help anyone start to access and use public transportation. Although travel training is not the only answer or the one answer, it can be an effective tool for improving and maintaining mobility for older adults. As older adults who may be facing diminishing driving skills that still have a need or a desire for independent access to their resources and community, travel training can be of a benefit for them. So for those of you who may not be as familiar with travel training, it is a specific program designed to introduce seniors and persons with disability to public transportation. It is free of charge. It's provided one-on-one or in groups. It is customized to the person's needs as well as their current skill level. And it's available throughout Clark County, Camas, Washougal, Yackel, Ridgefield, Battleground, Rush Prairie, wherever somebody has a need or desire to learn to use public transportation. There are different aspects of training. It may include helping to develop personalized planning that addresses the needs of the person, such as maybe walk a little bit less when they're using the bus, a better path of travel that's more accessible for them, or maybe using less transfers. Fixed route, vehicle familiarization, that is just basically bringing somebody into C-Tran where we have a bus not in service, giving them the opportunity to
off the bus, learn what the bus looks like, what they do. If they're in a mobility device, they have the ability to practice getting on and off in that device without the pressure of the bus being on a route. We do, of course, how to use the fixed route 101, how to read schedules, how to exit and get on the bus etiquette, planning trips, locating different places in the community, and how to, you know, plan a trip maybe either through the C-Tran website, the Rider's Digest, or using just Google Maps. In helping us out, we have travel ambassadors and travel clubs. Travel ambassadors are volunteers that volunteer their time to provide that little extra assistance that a person may want learning to use the bus. And it helps them with that initial fear of using public transportation by accompanying them on their trip. They may go to their home, meet up with the person, and do the entire trip with them, round trip, until they're feeling more comfortable and with doing that independently. So it just, you know, gives them that extra little security. Travel ambassadors also coordinate travel clubs. They connect with senior living facilities and give an opportunity for seniors to participate as a group in fun activities such as going to concerts in the park, maybe the Christmas tree lighting, farmers market, Fort Vancouver, maybe going up to New Seasons for a concert that they have there. So they're doing some events with other senior citizens, and they're having that social interaction while also using and learning to use public transportation. So for seniors riding the bus for the first time, it's kind of new and scary. So the part of the outreach that I do, we try to point out some of the features on the bus that make riding safer and easier than they may think. Part of the outreach is letting people know the different features, such as the accessibility. Our buses are easy to board. They all have, all of our buses kneel. And what that means is you can see this bus is kind of tipped. It just lowers the entrance point of the bus. So that step into the bus is lower for a person who may have difficulty entering the bus with the step is too high. And if they need even a little bit more assistance in getting into and out of the bus. The next slide shows all of our buses have lifts and ramps, which surprises a lot of folks nowadays. They don't always realize that all of our buses are accessible. And the other thing is that the front seats on all the bus are all placarded with the please allow seniors and persons with disabilities to use these seats. Our drivers are also required to ask people that are using those seats to find another seat when a senior or person with disability comes on board. So that's something else that kind of comforts people knowing that they're going to have an easy place to go and sit down when they get on the bus. We also have audio announcements of major intersections and stops, AVA, automatic voice announcements. This is kind of what I think Ava looks like. She does a really good job informing the passengers of where they are along that route, announcing those major intersections and transfer points with other buses, as well as points of interest. We also have several cameras on our buses. We're in the process of upgrading that as well to where it's going to get to the point where there's not a point inside that bus. Cameras are not catching, and they're audio and videotaped, so it is a real good deterrent for things that are happening on the bus. And we're also having the bus cameras outside the bus that go all the way around the bus, so there is the security is going to be much higher with more cameras on there. So kind of talking with people about why to use public transportation is, you know, some things are pretty obvious. It increases their independence, their choice, and their spontaneity in life. It increases their opportunity, of course, for employment, healthcare access, exercise, education, things like that. And it also increases their self-confidence and self-sufficiency that they feel. The other benefits are also that it costs for a senior citizen only 85 cents per boarding or $30 a month for a bus route. And I know I can't even fill my car for that. So for some folks on a fixed income, this might be a good opportunity for them to save some money each month.
What's your cost avoidance? Sorry.
Sure. Oh, the cost avoidance of $33.82, that is the cost avoidance, the difference between the price it costs to provide a ride on our paratransit or CVM compared to the cost per boarding on a fixed route. And the benefits to using it is communities that drive less have lower obesity rates, engagement in the community decreases isolation, which is so important. As people are growing older, they tend to become more isolated. And when older adults are able to age in place, pretty much everybody wins. And that's really the trend now is, you know, people are wanting to age in their own homes or not wanting to move out, but like as tradition was, you know, here not too long ago. So being able to access and use public transportation, it really helps that out. So this is a person, Susan. She uses she's a CVAN person, but she also uses C-Tran about 3 days a week to get to and from various community locations. Although CVAN works very well for her in some aspects of her life, it doesn't always. When she wants to go to the mall, she wants to go to Walmart, or meet up with a friend, those are those day-to-day decisions that she's now able to use or to access by using fixed route. She gets up in the morning, she can decide when she gets up what time she wants to go. If she's using CVAN only, she would have had to make that decision a day or two prior. And when that day comes, you can't change that. So she really loves the flexibility that C-Trans gives her, the fixed routes. So next I'm gonna have a testimonial by Sharon and Luann. This clip is actually from Intercity Transit up in Olympia. Hopefully soon we'll have our own video like this, but I just wanted to share this one with you.
You know, we should have done this first. She's in Paris drinking wine.
Right along with whoever's on.
Couldn't we have moved the meeting?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
How about it?
Deal without the audio. It's not working.
Sorry.
I'm sure okay. They're saying nice things.
Look at
me. Can you paraphrase for us real quick? Sure. Basically, what they're speaking about is she's currently talking about what it's like to get her mobility device onto the bus, talking about the ramps and how they have a nice gentle slope to them. And she's easily able to get on and off of that bus. And that she went through travel training to learn how to do this and was surprised, pleasantly surprised on how easy it was to do. Then Luann there is gonna come in pretty soon, and she's also kind of saying the same thing about being able to get on. She was more nervous because her device is obviously much larger than her counterparts there and made her very nervous to get onto the bus. So, you know, she's very happy again with the travel training, being able to get on and off that bus. And she really enjoys the ability and the freedom, as she says it. She feels it's the freedom of being able to go when I want to go. And it's the freedom to be able to just sip into a store and sit out.
Yeah.
She talks about how the drivers are very friendly. They're very helpful when they go to secure her down. They offer her, they set up the seats for her, they wait for her to go in, they offer her the lap belt. She says someday they'll probably offer her a cup of coffee so she feels. They're so accommodating. So again, her big point was that, you know, the freedom that it allows her to have in her life. So. I can't say it as well as they did, but they just had a great way of saying it. So some different places that are pretty popular for people to get to in their everyday lives that C-Tran has great access to. So we have stops right in front of, next slide, the community centers, both First and Bergen Marshall Center, which both have senior, most of you guys know, the senior activity centers in them. And then there's also Estes Shore Park, where there's several different activities throughout the year. Great access to that, as well as shopping. You know, the Fred Meyers, the Walmarts, things like that. Peace Health, Vancouver Medical, Vancouver Clinic, all of the medical appointments, as well as Westfield Mall. Of course, we have our transit center there, so great access to the mall. So in travel training this year, we had some goals, and we're gonna be increasing the number of travel ambassadors to 3. We have 2 right now. One is Everett Smith, and the other is Virginia Edwards. And they both concentrate on helping people with several different, either disabilities or senior citizens, and our travel clubs. And both are very long-term C-Tran riders. We also want to help increase the outreach to senior citizens by going to more facilities. I've been to Quarry and Glenwood and Smith Towers, Cascade, and several of them, doing some presentations, just introducing what Fixed Drive is like. Hoping to increase that travel club participation. And then develop some what's called One Best Away brochures. And well, maybe some welcome packages to people who are brand new to senior living facilities, where maybe we'll give them the Writer's Digest, some information about travel training, and some very specific brochures about where they can go from where they're now living. That's just one us. They don't have to do transfers. Very simple, very good directions on how to get there, as well as ideas of activities that go on at those locations. The last thing is implementing the passenger orientation by having set dates that we have classes for people that want to learn to use the buses, as well as videos that we can mail out or have on YouTube, our website, things like that, that show different parts of how to learn to ride the fixed routes. So that's pretty much it. This is kind of a snapshot of what travel training is. And in closing, I just want to say it's the hope that travel training can be a bridge that connects older adults with the freedom to travel on their own terms and in their own community. So thank you.
I have 2 questions. Number 1 is, for the travel training, do you wait until you have a class, or if somebody needed that, can you do a one-on-one? And my second question is, do you allow pets other than service dogs on the buses? The
first part of that is we absolutely do one-on-one training. All somebody needs to do is to call. I've got some brochures for travel training here, as well as my cards, and then some information on the travel ambassadors too, if somebody wanted to become a travel ambassador. And then the second part, we do allow pets on the buses that are not service animals, but they do need to be contained in a pet crate.
Thank you.
And then I wonder, I think it's awesome that you have the announcements, because I know when I've ridden the bus, that's my anxiety, is am I going to miss my stop, and then I won't know how to get back where I was supposed to be. What about folks who are hearing impaired? Will the driver tell them that they're at their stop, or what accommodations will you be able to make?
Yes, ADA requires that if a person with a disability request from the driver to stop at a specific bus stop. The drivers will do that. And our drivers are happy to make sure that they get them off the right spot.
And then I wondered, as a community, are we doing a good job of where the bus stops are sited? You mentioned some really big places like Walmart. One bus stop that stands out to me is the Winco that's close to my home, and how the bus stop is way out on the highway, but Winco is way across, you know, this huge parking lot. So if I had someone whose mobility and endurance is a little limited, that would be really difficult.
You know, that brings up one thing that has been a soapbox of mine, and Chuck knows this as well, is that one of the things I think that the community has to really advocate for is when some of these commercial establishments decide to locate on a particular boulevard, avenue, whatever, that they don't take the traditional model of putting this huge parking lot, then building with their back entrance for shipping and stuff like that, but rather they put it on
Street.
Give you a good example is that we transport a lot of people to the Walmart on 104th, and there's a bus stop close to that. If they would have placed the Walmart on Mill Plain or closer towards Mill Plain, then probably half of the C-Van rides at $39 per passenger boarding wouldn't have to take place. But it's a new way of looking at universal design that says, you know, when thinking about that, take a page from the history books where you had store fronts, and that way people that are using not only buses, but walking or bicycling, there isn't this huge distance to travel. I was really disappointed on 4th Plain and Grand when they tore down the old Fred Meyer. They had a perfect opportunity because right there, is going to be one of the bus rapid transit stops. And they created this pathway that's going to be extremely difficult for people, especially with sight impairments, to get to and from public transportation to the store. So that's something that we, as a community, can say, hey, listen, you know, start talking to the realtors, start talking to the developers, because right now it's being done in other communities, but it's not normal type of development. And that's something we should look at.
So it's a code issue? The county doesn't put a code in that says you don't get to build your big mega store unless you cite it.
I want you to know that the commission is aware of this, and Jose Alvarez is part of community planning, and I did a presentation, it's been a year ago, to what is the name of the group that this is a group that meets
Developers Engineering Advisory Board?
Yes, Developers Engineering Advisory Board. They meet once a month here in this building, and this is all about industrial and commercial development, and that was exactly the point that we were making. And it's not only seniors, but and people with disabilities, but employers, you know, have people that would prefer to take a bus to work as opposed to, and the bus drops them off at the street, and then they have to walk 3 acres.
Well, there's also the mother with the stroller and two other little kids, you know, and grocery bags. It's
exactly
universal.
I'd much rather look at a storefront than I would see a blacktop person. That's my
I agree. And I would like for a member of NCOA to be able to sit in on those meetings. You know, I think it's important, really important. Anyway.
Another accessibility question is, does C-TRAN have a mechanism to provide input as it relates to sidewalks and how accessible the bus stops are? Sidewalks being up to them. Is that right, Chuck? One of our drums that we beat a lot is
customers constantly give us suggestions, occasionally they'll throw a complaint. But we use that when we're in communication with the county, with the city, any of the jurisdictions. We have limited influence, to be quite honest with you. It really depends more on the city themselves or the particulars of a particular road. What I would suggest to anybody is just simply to call our customer service and make a comment. Make a suggestion as far as a different bus stop or where a location should be. We just upgraded. It was kind of embarrassing. We had a bus stop that's right on the east side of our garage where a share house is. And what was famous about that particular stop was that it had, you know, those bumper guards you see parking lots that stops the car. You had one here, and one here. Here was the road. It was a grandfather before the ADA, and it was a stop that was used a lot by our drivers doing driver relief. But it was embarrassing. Nobody in a wheelchair could even enter that at all. And so after, I've been there since 1996, 97, it finally got changed this year, and there's now a pull-out, it's accessible and all that kind of stuff. And that's in our backyard. So my point of it is that it's a time-honored process of just continuing to tell us that this isn't what we want and being persistent in doing so. I mean, we're like anyone else. It takes us a while sometimes to get it through our thick heads.
Can I ask a question that's unrelated to this, but related to what we've been talking about? Would you be willing, when we talk about issues related to transportation, to be an active part of that discussion?
Oh, of course. Yeah. Myself, and there's plenty of other folks that see transit, have far more skills than I do and more experience too. We would love to be able to provide any assistance.
Well, we want more and more proactively as we address particular subjects to get people in the community who really deal with those subjects all the time together to give us some insight.
Yeah, Walt was on our transportation group for when we had that, and so he was great as far as I was concerned. But I have a question. Veronica, you mentioned this new Freedom Funds. So, any kind of weather extension? Kind of like ears for that.
I kind of understand. That leads me to your homework assignment.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it was a good segue that Bill led us into, and then he just kind of came in behind it. I don't know, Abby Costello comes to mind, but if you look at that young lady right there, Linda David, with the Regional Transportation Council, what's interesting is right now, until the end of September 27th, the Regional Transportation Council has a draft human services transportation plan ready for review that would love your comments. And what's important about that is the human services transportation plan is the guideline that the state of Washington uses as a way to say, these are some acceptable local community projects that should be used to improve services for seniors and people with disabilities. And all you have to go is to rtc.wa.gov, and you'll see it. It's under the Washington Transportation Plan, so right on the front page. And then it'll ask you your opinion. Yes, the homework assignment is to talk to as many people as possible to try to get them to read that plan, add their two cents. I've been a bureaucrat now for 37 years, and so as a bureaucrat, it's easy for us to work in a vacuum. And this is a chance for the community to have input into what the state of Washington does, what C-TRAN does. We use the Human Services Transportation Plan to help guide what we're going to do with what is called 5310 and 5317 federal transit congestion. We have some ideas right now, things that you may be excited about. We're going to include services possibly to increase the services through the Reserve a Ride program, possibly to do services on the VA campus. We were talking about electric vehicles. There's actually a manufacturer of electric vehicles here in Clark County, right on Evergreen and near the Vancouver warehouse, that makes small size jitneys that are maybe 10,000 in the Philippines. They're all electric, they're fairly inexpensive. They're an alternative to gas or hybrid technology. So that's my homework assignment.
Do you have a little bit of verbiage we could use on that? Because I could get this out immediately to 450 different homes of seniors that I'm sure would.
I'll email Colette with a little blurb.
It's a little blurb, yeah.
I can tell you what the blurb is going to be. Is go to rtc.wa.gov, read it, tell us what you think. So it's literally that.
But it is about transportation.
It's called Human Services Transportation.
Okay.
The updated version should be online by about October the 1st, but the existing version is online now. So if you see gaps and omissions in the current plan, let us know, and we can add it to the updated plan.
So in that plan, is, and you know this from experience with you all, is, you know, a lot of the stops don't have even the little white poles, and a lot of the stops, even in front of large, you know, heavy use places, don't have the contain, you know, where you can get out of the weather or whatever. You know, I've seen some of them not used at all for a long time, and I'm like, well, pick them up and put them somewhere else. So in that part, you know, are they gonna, I know about the permits and all of the yaya, and that's part of the county part too that makes it really, really tough. But is there gonna be funding or any movement? You know, I'm not talking about the BRT, but I'm talking about just input on what you do. Does that even come into it?
The Human Services Transportation Plan really makes the case for the state and federal, what they call consolidated public transportation funding program. And also CTRAN gets what's called $5310. But there's very strict stipulations as to what you can use that money for, and that's one of the issues. But the plan itself can make the case, and we can sort of spread the word to the agencies that need to take action.
Well, it just makes sense if they want seniors and other people to ride the bus, and we have our weather, which is, you know, we don't live in Palm Springs, that they would, A, accommodate people that walk, you know, a half a mile out of their residency to get to the main thoroughfare, so maybe they have, you know, one little thing or whatever it is. I mean, I get the part about vandalism and all of that, but if it seems if you're not going to increase a way for them to get out of the weather for the 15 minutes until the bus comes, or sit, you know, all of that part of it, they're not going to increase their ridership. You know, they're going to go, why in the heck would I walk half a mile to go stand out in the middle of nowhere? There's no light, there's no safety, and get on your bus.
What the plan does is identify the community's priorities. Doesn't necessarily, the Human Services Transportation Plan is then used by the state, by CTRAN, and the FTA as a way to say, this is what Clark County wants, this is what's important to Clark County. And amenities, bus shelters, semi-seats that you've probably seen where it looks like there's just two buses.
Yep.
Those are all bus amenities, and those are things that are listed in the transportation plan.
They're in the plan? But then you get to dictate how you get your $5310.
$5310 is very specific. It says it has to be done for services that goes beyond what is normally provided by public transportation provider.
But that's the problem, because you don't provide that. and only 90% of the area is on the bus route.
We do provide it. We have over 1,200 stops. Out of those 1,200 stops, 200 of them have shelters. But you have to look at the way that we site a bus stop, I mean, not a bus stop, a bus shelter, is based on the amount of traffic that
happens. Right.
If that place maybe serves 2-3 individuals a day, then it doesn't really warrant the resources that a place that gets
paid. I get that part. You're talking about wanting to get people out and start using transit more and getting them so that they're not as obese and they have options and alternatives to get out there. This has been my work hire when I was on the CCAC is, if you do not provide them some security and shelter, they're not going to find a value in it, and they're either going to stay shut in, or they're gonna find an alternative, like not, you know, getting you to come and pick them up and take them to a doctor's appointment where you don't get half of the dollars that another company will get because of some rule. So the other dollar amounts that you were talking about is 5310, what's the other one?
5317, which is what pays for travel
trainer. What pays for the travel trainer. So that's the huge issue for me, and it always has and it always is until we can figure out a way to move it. Now Tacoma, a year or two ago, had started the process of being allowed to get reimbursed for their paratransit for doing things. Are they still, that was in an experimental?
That was actually state legislated.
Right, how did that work out?
Yeah, okay.
Did they get to keep it?
They got to keep a portion, not the, it wasn't a dollar for dollar reimbursement of their costs. It was $10.
Sorry, you put me on my warpath.
Okay.
No, I think it's great. I don't have a problem with it. I think it's awesome.
$64 question. How are we looking 10 years from now? Are we going to meet the need?
Right now, C-Train's on what is called a 20-year plan. When we had the last sales tax revenue vote in 2011, we made a commitment to the community saying, okay, this is a 20-year financial plan. And that, in turn, means that we're good for those 20 years. We're right now 3 years into it, so we have 17 years. And theoretically, the sales tax revenue at the rate that it is, which is 0.7%, will meet the needs to provide the service. Here's the caveat. If the, you've heard this phrase, pig in the python of seniors coming to Clark County using C-VAN services were to continue at the rate that they were 2 or 3 years ago, which was 6%, 7%, we won't make that 20-year goal. We may make 15 years, but that's the dilemma that we always have. And that's part of the reason why we want people on a fixed route. When we talk about cost avoidance, one of the things, every trip that Veronica can get an individual to use the fixed route bus system avoids almost $31 in expense, allowing us to stretch the dollars even more. You have one gentleman that travels from Yaco all the way to SEH America 5 days a week. If we were to provide that service to CDAM, that would be a horrendous amount of money. He's using fixed route, and he wants to because it gives him more freedom. So my answer to your $64,000 question is the fact that probably in the next 10 to 12 years, you may see us come back and say, hey, listen, we need to increase the sales tax percentage from 0.7% to 0.8%. Right now, 24%, let's call it 24% fare box recovery. So of all expenses, 24% of them are borne by the user, but public transportation is very dependent upon the generosity of the sales tax system.
Because we're going to have a lot more handicapped, older people, and the door-to-door is going to be important and expensive.
It's always going to be there. It's never not going to be there. But if you can do things so that individuals, we have a number of C-VAN customers that use C-VAN for those occasions where they can't. But on other times, when they can, they
we'll use it, for example, we just approved somebody the other day. They can't use the regular fixer out bus system with four bags of groceries. So what do we say? We say, okay, we expect you to use the fixer out bus station, bus system to get to retail, but on the return trip, we give you a CVM. It's called condition.
Just gonna have to have an awareness program out there to let the folks know what the needs are and what the expenses are.
One more question.
So we have time.
Well, Walt, it's not everybody else in here, heard me on this one, but the 53 TAM, and they end up being near here, how can we leverage those kinds of funds with other county or city funds to be able to provide access to get to the bus stop?
Well,
you know, from a neighborhood. And so leveraging funds, and it looks like it is the only way that we can do that from different pots of money.
Talking about sidewalks.
The sidewalks.
If we don't increase the sidewalks in our county, I don't see any hope for people, for the senior population to increase their...
And so that's what... Like my dear friend Linda, and my dear friend Walt, you know, those we have to look at some way to be able to leverage the few pennies that the county has set aside, and whatever the city might have over there, to be able to leverage enough to be able to go after federal funding that's setting. Just sitting out there. So that's my thing. That there's the $64,000 question.
Walt and Veronica, thank you so much. Really appreciate your presentation and your presence, and we definitely will be calling on Okay, we have some quick open business here, bylaw change. We had a couple things that we've talked about. Do you want to make some motions on these things, Bob?
Okay. The first one has to do with the election of officers. And what we're talking about is the nomination of officers shall take place once each calendar year in April, with the election of officers following in May. Then they take office at the first meeting in June. I make a motion to that.
Yes, sir.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay, the second bylaw question has to do with the executive committee. There's no provision in the bylaws now for an executive committee. So the motion is that the officer shall be designated as the executive committee, assuming such duties and responsibilities as authorized by the commission and the commission's bylaws.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay, we have two policy items. One is make a motion that the commission, in commission's developing projects, once completed, shall be spun off from the commission responsibility to the developed organization.
I second.
All those in favor?
We second.
Aye.
Okay. The last one is I make a motion that the commission will not provide operational funds to organizations being developed by the commission or other startup programs and services. We'll spend money to develop, but not necessarily to run. Okay?
Second.
Can you read that to me
just one more time?
Sorry.
Can you read the motion? Make a motion that when the commission will not provide operational funds to organizations being developed by the commission
and other startup programs and services.
Thank you.
Murray seconds. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Okay. That covers. There was more discussions that we had, and maybe later we'll have some more business to do.
We're tabling the treasurer appointment and the work plan.
Work plan is one.
Executive committee we just did.
Yeah.
So that's taken care of. And the COA October meeting topic is now, it's a given with Gail, right?
Yes, Gail will be here.
Can you tell them what that is?
Gail Haskett, as you recall, has been to the commission a couple of times to talk about where the state agency, Council on Aging is, as well as an update to the Joint Legislative Committee. They're due to have their report out for their recommendations to the governor. So she's
that should be a good discussion.
Is Paul going to be coming with her?
I do not know.
Okay. He's talking about Congress.
Paul Harris, yes.
All right. Comments from you folks? Anything? Questions? Whatever?
I do have one in there.
You were going to say something. Yes. Right. We have your two new commissioners lined up already.
We do not. We are in process of making that selection.
Probably a month or 2 months before we finally, before we stamp it.
Okay.
I just wanted to make an announcement about the Southwest Washington Elder Abuse Prevention Coalition is holding a gatekeeper training on October the 7th. It's at Peace Health. It's from, there are actually two sessions, one from 2 to 3:30 and one from 4:30 to 6. In fact, would it be possible to get a link on our website, Jackie? And gatekeeper training is for volunteers, friends, church members, neighbors, and we're actually would also like to do training in local businesses. And it's for people who come in contact with older adults and those who have disabilities on a regular basis. The gatekeeper program helps vulnerable people who need help. They go through training about what phone numbers to access help for the individual that they're concerned about. And so just wanted to let you know about that training. It would be a great opportunity. Does anyone
have? No, I have another announcement.
Oh.
Okay. Go ahead.
In the legal field, we have guardian ad litem that get together once a month, and lawyers, and we talk and have presentations. And so, I had the opportunity to get with Dawn, and not even begin to say her last name, from Olympia with DSHS. And so COA is basically going to house it. And so I called Colette and said, you know, this is something that the public needs to know to and people. And so in a week and a half time of just putting it out, we have guaranteed 37, I believe.
Wow.
And it's tomorrow, and it's here, and it's from 1 to 3 o'clock. Wow. So the program is from DSHS on the COPES program, all different kinds of in-home services that people can get. So it's free. And thank God for Colette getting me the room. But it'll be just, I think, one of the beginnings. She's really excited about getting in touch with the Commission on Aging. She had no clue. She doesn't think that anybody else has a clue, but DSHS is moving, and they're gonna, I think it'll be a good contact for us on different parts of it. So,
super, yeah. Good for you.
So come at 1 o'clock.
It's 1 o'clock here?
Yep, from 1 to 1
here.
It's her presentation. She's bringing a PowerPoint that she's also gonna let us have and put as a link on our website, and she's bringing the material. We didn't even have to pay for the material. And then she's going to take an hour worth of Q&A. But one of the things, hopefully, that she's going to talk about is how people apply for these services and different criteria and what happens when you get in an emergency situation and And it just speaks volumes to what we do, and it's all about the knowledge. The last thing I want to talk about to answer Bob's question is I've been working on a little paragraph on, I'm going to ask Greg to put it in the messenger. I'm going to try to get the Columbian to do it in the public service after everybody looks at it and Oliver and the girls sign off on it, to start forming my committee for whatever, and to come up with a name of what we're going to call happening in 15 months. My first problem was this, is I went on the business license website to see, you know, businesses and stuff, and I think that this has to get out to all the businesses, and I am clueless, you guys, on how, once we start, is to get the information out to everybody in our county that we're going to do this. So, you know, there might be some little lady in the back that does whatever and works. So how, that's one of the things I'm going to need help to figure. I mean, I was like, oh, and you know, I looked at this. So I don't know how, but, you know, I figured cities and stuff, you know, we let them do. So that's where I am with that.
And you know, something that's very, and this happened with us this week, our presentation at the college. We learned that whatever a session is called is very, very important.
It's a big deal. Mm-hmm.
It is a very, very big deal.
Yep.
And so really, I mean, we need to get a little bit smarter about all of that. And that's kind of gets back to the whole branding thing, you know, which I don't know quite where I'm going to go with that one. But boy, you know, we sure learned this last week about the titles and how important words are to individuals. And when you say universal design, you think a 70-year-old person out there knows what universal design is. No, but do they know what accessible is?
Or cares.
Huh?
Or cares.
Or cares, yeah. But do they know what accessibility means? Yes. You know, so it's those kinds of terminologies that are very, very important.
There was a guy who was teaching that class at the Tour Learning Center, Clark, who they offered the class last spring and did not get one student on Civil War. They renamed the class and they got 16 in a day or two. Same class.
They filled up the class.
Completely different name.
I actually remember seeing that in the catalog.
Now, but the name of it just now, I can't imagine where anybody would go. But it just, something about an antebellum, something.
Well, maybe we should see if we can spend a work session, if we can find a couple of marketing people.
Well, the Wazoo has some tremendous people.
But you know, remember the guys from Leadership Clark County?
Yes.
There was one guy that is what he does. That's him.
Who is
and he? And he chased Karen and I out in the parking lot.
Who is he?
It's High Five, their digital social media. Yeah.
I have an announcement, if I may.
You may.
On the neighborhood planning project that I've been working on, I've got two that I've got set up now to start working with, the North Crest and the Lincoln. And because I assume that one of these days I'm going to be hit by a truck, I have prepared a manual for the next person who takes over. And I have filled out every time I find something new or I make a mistake, I correct it and I add it to this. So the next person to come along is going to be able to pick it up. And it's going to be important because there's only 64 associations. And it's going to take 30 years to get through.
Now, is that the city, though, or is that the city and
the
county?
Just the city. Just the city.
You got the county.
And then count the cities in and any other areas that we want to. We're talking a lot more. So it's going to take a while.
Yeah.
I'm not going to get hit by a truck and I'm not going to die, but I am keeping this thing available for a work plan. And one more comment, and I wanted to make it to the transportation people, but I didn't. But one of the suggestions I'm making to each of these associations is that they buy 2 or 3 electric cars.
No way.
And they can then travel within the association, for one thing. They'll have them parked in a, hopefully parked in a central place where they can get to them. And they're really golf carts that are street ready. But in the Northcrest area, just not too far from where the area is this bus stop. And they can take their carts over there. And I talked to the Safeway place, and they said, we'll park them right in front of the wow. Safeway, and we'll watch them, and they can leave them there.
Wow.
So, but the main thing is being able to travel within, because some of them are kind of big.
You're going to have to, it just creates a whole new issue. When I was doing my doctoral work, I lived in Claremont, California, where there are lots of retirement homes. And every so often, a golf cart would end up on 10 freeway.
Oh, gosh.
They would take a wrong entrance or whatever, and suddenly you're going 70 miles an hour beside
what? Well, at Fairway Village, there's probably 10 of them.
Really?
And
that they share?
Yeah, and they drive up to Fred Meyer.
That's very cool.
They don't go very far.
But they go across 164?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
You can.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
I did not know that. Okay.
I have an announcement. All right. Before we finish up. On October 5th, which is a Sunday, at 7 o'clock in the meeting, and 7 o'clock in the evening, the Clinton Street Theater is going to do a showing of a documentary that is entitled Time for Money. The documentary was produced by Lenore Eklund. Lenore Eklund is the person who has reconstituted the Portland Time Bank.
Oh.
And Judy Ware, who was part of the Time Banking Committee, and I went to one of the Portland Time Banking meetings. It's been 2 months ago now, and at that time they had, I don't remember, 12, 15 members, something like that. They now have 242. I was on Facebook last night looking at their page. So they're doing a great job of getting themselves back together. I will be going to that film. If there's anyone that would like to go with me, you're welcome.
Where's that?
It's at the Clinton Street Theater in Portland, Southeast Portland. October 5th, Sunday evening, 7 p.m. And I'd like to add that Edward Kahn, who really is the father of time banking, reviewed the film in Time Banking USA, the edition of that magazine. And it's the most current edition. The review is on page 7 for anybody that's interested in looking at it. So, keep that date in mind. I'd love to have a bunch of you come if you're interested.
Okay, I think we're adjourned.
Bob.
Oh, okay.
Okay, go ahead.